Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
1010 on WGN. Thank you, Domati. Thank you. What's the name of the guy that does sports around here?
I'm hardly here, so I totally understand
Joe
that.
Joe Brand is actually in the house. He was there for the donut delivery this morning. Nice to see you again, Joe.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Last couple times we visited with you, you were in a clubhouse, right?
typically a hotel room, but yeah, I spent a lot of time in clubhouses.
Yeah, you're not on the road today, huh?
No, we got a home game, so
Cougars are going to play maybe not, huh?
I think so. I think they're optimistic. We'll see.
Man, that was a miserable game yesterday.
Ugh.
What a miserable day for a ball game. And then you say, okay, but they're going to play. It's the Crosstown Classic. It's the Cubs and the White Sox. This will be fun. And in fact, I read Paul Sullivan's really good piece, which sort of took you A to Z through some of the great moments of Cubs-Sox baseball. And there's some really fun stories in there that you sort of forget about over the years. And then that game was over before there were two outs in that game.
It's kind of a rivalry that had died over the past few years just because the way the season series had matched up. There were four straight games, two at home, two on the road. Now I think they've gotten in the right direction putting two separate series, and it's very interesting because the first series is now, and the next series isn't until September. And I think everyone was expecting to be a nice sunny day at Wrigley this weekend, and that's not the
case. I felt so bad for the people that were there because you say, hey, I got tickets to the Classic, and it'll be middle of May, the weather will be good then, and this is just, the weather continues to be so disappointing for baseball fans. I like David Haugh's piece in the Tribune yesterday, too, who also said, he didn't have high expectations for this series, and the Sox are not competitive with the Cubs right now. But he said this is going to be a good series next year, the year after, 5 years going forward. This is really going to be a fun baseball series to watch.
Yeah, hopefully it can get back to, just a few years ago when both teams were super competitive.
Or at least we're fighting.
Exactly, and fighting in the stands. That's what I was about to say. You don't see any beer being tossed anywhere around.
Brzezinski and Barrett squaring each other up.
Oh. Good old days.
How much fun was that?
It was great.
It was a terrible thing. It was not fun at all.
Friendships were broken. It was amazing.
Peter Lisagor used to write for the Chicago Daily News from 1959 to 1976. So if you don't know that name, he's passed, but he was a signature name in American journalism. He was on Meet the Press. He was on Face the Nation. And he was really one of the most respected journalists in America. He was a Chicagoan. In 1977, America's largest chapter of the Society for Professional Journalists, the Chicago Headline Club, established the Peter Lisagor Awards to recognize, quote, truly superior contributions to journalism. They have an annual banquet and award ceremony. They held it last night, and winning the award for best podcast was The Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast that we record here at WGN Radio, portions of which we broadcast right after the 11 o'clock WGN Radio News on Saturday morning. I hosted Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, Scott Stannis, Steve Bertrand are the principals, but you'll sometimes hear Patty Vasquez and Justin Kaufman and others fill in when one of us are not able to be there. But that's the core. Elif Garris produces it. Ben Cortez engineers it. And it's really good because the gang is really smart, really tapped in, really civil, really funny, but really angry at each other sometimes, too. Not always, but sometimes. And I just think if, we all think that journalism or conversation should be like that, I think those guys get it and do it pretty well. This week, they got a little rascally. I'll continue to broadcast portions of the award-winning now Mincing Rascals podcast on Saturdays after the 11 o'clock WGN Radio News. So congratulations and props to them. We posted on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on all media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Actually, this was a Twitter post, WGN King John on Twitter. I said, help me remember the things that your mom or my mom, our moms have said. What's that thing mom always says? My friend Mark Baser right away typed in, Mark, you're overtired. Chuck, who's now in his 50s, wrote, my mom still asks, Chuck, did you wash your hands when I come in from the bathroom or out from taking the garage out? He's in his 50s. Chuck, did you wash your hands? Another Mark said, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. How many times have you walked out the door and you heard your mom say something like that? Julie said, my mom used to say, God writes straight with crooked lines. And I still don't know what that means. What does that mean? God writes straight with crooked lines. That sounds profound. I don't know what that is. Deanna said, my mom would say, don't wrinkle your nose like that. It'll freeze that way. John says, my mom would say, that's so far away. It's where God left his shoes. VJ, my mom usually says something she finds funny, and then she'll say, now that's a T-shirt. Dorothy, as kids, when we complained, she would say, offer it up. Kim said that when a simple no would do, my mom would say, well, and people in hell want ice water. Raise your hand if you've heard that one before. Chris's mom would say, I don't like your attitude. And Julie said, whenever we would go to a restaurant, mom would always say, order the house dressing. I love those little, you know, signature lines that moms have. Dads, too, in certain settings. Mom would always say, order the house dressing. You knew it was coming as soon as the menus were passed. Kim, in response to whining about something that hurt, if we were whining about an owie, something that hurt, my mom would say, hey, I had a pain once. It was named Kim. Lana says, my mom would say, consider the source when someone says something not nice. Ellen said, whenever we would ask what's for dinner, my mom would reply, chicken skins and beans. But it never was. The Pester Papper on my Twitter page wrote, everyone has good inside them. Some just take a little longer to find it. And another Jim wrote, if wishers were horses, beggars would ride. Again, another saying that sort of reeks of wisdom, and I still don't know if I understand that one. Joe, can you explain that to us? If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. I'm sure that means something.
No.
Does mean something. Griffin, what does if wishes were horses, beggars would ride mean? You're not real good on that one, Griff?
I get the spirit, though.
That's about what a lot of these are. And I'm sure if I sat down and dissected it, well, let's see. People who are begging are asking for something that I don't know.
They wish for things. They don't take action. That's why they beg.
If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. So what does that mean, Domati?
Yeah, beggars ride on wishes.
There you go.
Break down the sentence. Beggars are riding on the wishes.
Right.
So if all you're doing is wishing, it will turn you into a beggar. You need to, like Domati said, get out there and make it happen.
But why do you need multiple horses to ride? Yeah. Wouldn't one wish equal one horse being able to ride?
Okay, if a wish was a horse, then a beggar would ride that one horse. How's that? Is that better?
Got it. Now I got it.
It doesn't have the nice ring to it, though, does it, Griff, the way you put it?
If a woodchuck chucked, could a woodchuck...
My mom would always say that, if a woodchuck chucked.
Hey, listen, walk us through this thing. Speaking of sayings, so do you remember last week? It was about this time on Saturday. I hope you were listening. But we were talking about John Mulaney, who just dropped another concert.
A comedy special.
Yeah.
On Netflix called Kid Gorgeous.
And on Kid Gorgeous, Griff, I'll just get it started, but then you have to take it from there. So on this comedy special, he remembered back in Chicago. Do you have the audio of this that I'm about to ask you to play? Oh, you think we're doing it later? Oh, that's right. Yeah, we're gonna do it later.
Let's take a break.
I know. We got to do it later because, in fact, we're going to go to a Dane here in a second. But let me just remind you that I think it was at this time last week. They were talking about the John Mulaney special, and he made fun of a guy that used to come into school and do sort of safety security lessons for the kids called Street Smarts. And the guy who he lampooned was quoted in the Chicago Tribune this week. So if you remember us talking about and playing that last week, you want to be listening in the, I think, 11 o'clock hour. We'll finally get to it. But it's really funny what Mr. Bitbinder had to say. So we'll catch you up on that, too. It's 10:19. The Childish Gambino video now has almost 80 or just over 80 million views. It blew up, as they say, the internet over the week. Everybody's been writing and talking about it. We'll play a few clips from that for you after 10:30. Read from some of your posts on my Facebook page and let you comment on This Is America. Dane Neal's going to join us. We'll talk a little motorsports in the 11 o'clock hour. Let's do that now then, Griff. So when John Mulaney did this comedy special, he reminded us that when he was in school here in Chicago, he had this bitbinder guy, a former Chicago cop. Maybe he was a Chicago cop at the time.
You keep saying bitbinder.
What is it?
You've said that a number of times.
I know it's bothering you. What did I...
Bittenbinder. Detective J.J. Bittenbinder.
Bittenbinder. Pardon me. But for a syllable, I was that close, Griffin.
Yeah, but when you've been reminded multiple times, it starts to grate.
On you? Okay, so my audience is used to this. okay, so you take it from here then, Mr. Bittenbinder man.
Well, I was trying to play up the local angle as a reason for talking about it on the show last week. Because people were discovering that this was a real man and he had VHS tapes that people were now buying a lot of.
Yeah.
But it seemed like maybe a little bit of a stretch. But then the Chicago Tribune had a story, sort of a profile of J.J. Bittenbinder, that just this in the past couple days. And I love the headline, which is noted former Chicago police detective not amused by Netflix comedian's parody. And
well, I guess it's real, though. I mean, can you play a little for us the John Mulaney description of what this guy was like?
Yeah, one sec.
Detective J.J. Bittenbinder wore three-piece suits. He also wore a pocket watch. 2 years in a row, he wore a cowboy hat. He also had a huge handlebar mustache. None of that matters, but it's important to me that you know that.
That was important for me to play because that's how the Chicago Tribune actually begins their story, with a response to that particular point about the cowboy hat. So it begins the story by Tracy Swartz. Let's get one thing straight. Former Chicago police detective J.J. Bittenbinder would never wear a cowboy hat with his three-piece suits. And then a quote from him. I never wore my cowboy hat to the schools. Now, I have been on cattle drives. I did 11 cattle drives and 11 cattle roundups in a ranch outside Cody, Wyoming. But that's a separate deal. You don't wear a three-piece suit with a cowboy hat. That just doesn't work. Doesn't look good.
Oh, man.
He told the Tribune by phone from Wisconsin, where he is enjoying his retirement.
Yeah, so he was a cop, and he really did do these sessions, almost little TED Talks for the kids and public service groups.
And for other people. And we actually got a couple calls and texts last week saying I was in a class or, you know, whatever, that was run by J.J. Bittenbinder, and a lot of people found him helpful.
So, yeah, right.
You know, worth noting.
Yeah, no kidding. So there really was a Bittenbinder. And he is still out there and maybe listening today, but paying attention to that whole story. That's funny. It's 10:28. That Childish Gambino song is positively fascinating and jarring. If you haven't seen it right now, you can go on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John, or just Google it. You can watch it and listen to it. We're going to talk a little bit about that after the news. The news is next on GN. It's 10:37. Thank you, Doma T. This is John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Childish Gambino in the new This Is America video. Walks and dances and struts in a vast white warehouse. Have you seen this? If you have, text or call 312-981-7200. Sounds kind of fun, doesn't it? So that's the way it starts, him sort of strutting onto the scene in this great big white warehouse. He comes upon a hooded man, bound to a chair. Gambino is handed a gun, strikes a pose, and shoots him execution style. The gun is then carried away on a red cloth as he dances with young people in school uniforms.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. What I'm whipping up. This is America. Don't catch you slipping up. Don't catch you slipping up. Look what I'm whipping up. This is America.
Goes on like that for a little while. He's looking right at the camera, and you are transfixed by his dance moves and the dance moves of the people around him. The dance moves conjure up South Africa. They conjure up Jim Crow. They conjure up the 1970s. People even talk about the clothes that he is and isn't wearing, and what does that mean? In the next scene, he comes upon a church choir of eight people in robes. They're on risers, and he joins them singing and dancing. Then he's handed a gun.
This is America.
Shoots him dead.
Don't catch you slipping now. Don't catch you slipping now. Look what I'm whipping up.
And then he starts dancing again as all sorts of curious things happened around him. A horse runs by. There's cars with their flashers on, late models that have the doors open, and it's just the sort of cacophony of sights and images and sounds. And the whole time you cannot take your eyes off of him. His dancing and presence is so charismatic. I hate to say this, it is so entertaining, it is so thought-provoking, and it is so violent and garish, and you wonder, what am I looking at, and what is he saying? Okay, I'll stop right there, guys. Griff, what was your reaction to the new Childish Gambino video?
Not the same as yours. You're transfixed by it, and
how many times did you watch it?
Confused and disturbed. It's disturbing, and then it's also disturbing the fact that you do want to go back and watch it, because it is, entertaining is this kind of a gross word in the context, but it is. He's magnetic. I was curious what Domati thought.
What do you think, Domati?
Well, I think you guys use the right word with entertainment too, because I think he's trying to say that sometimes we get so transfixed on what's entertaining that we forget what's important and sometimes dangerous and violent. And, you know, even the style of dance, how he goes from this more aggressive, naturally hip hop, more gangster movement, for lack of a better word, then goes back to these more effeminate dance moves, is kind of about this conversation that happens within urban culture about what's accepted in terms of masculinity and what's accepted in terms of how music sounds now versus how it used to sound back in hip hop's heyday. So I think some of that entertainment aspect, it being entertaining, making us ignore the craziness that happens around us, is kind of what I got from it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and then what happens is you're entertained by it and kind of blown away, and that message maybe does reach you, the fact that you're missing what's behind him as you're just, because you can't look away from him, but all the violence and destruction that happens behind him is fascinating, and then you want to share it, but that's kind of part of the point too, is that we are always compelled to share these images of violence, and what does that say? And then kind of playing into his hand, I think, when you do for a lot of us, when you do share it. So it's complicated, but I don't like to ascribe literal meaning to it in this way, but that's kind of what naturally happens when you talk about it.
And the thing begs you to do that. I mean, literally.
It does. It begs to be interpreted, because it is ambiguous, though. That's one of my favorite thing that I read about it was by Doreen St. Felix in The New Yorker, and she had a million smart things to say about it. One of them was that it's a fundamentally ambiguous document, that people are dying to tell you what he means with this video, but there seem to be a lot of contradictory things that are coming at you from it.
What do you mean by that?
Contradictory
things.
It's about gun violence. It's about entertainment. Maybe not contradictory, but there's like a number of messages that you could receive from it.
Well, it is. It's not hypocritical.
And some of them kind of.
Not the right word, but I mean,
maybe not. No.
If his point is that for all of the violence around us, we aren't paying sufficient attention to it. Hey, look, we're dancing over here. We're watching this music, and we don't seem to be paying sufficient attention. What is he doing but offering up a really, I'm sorry, entertaining, violent piece of video? I mean,
I guess that's what I meant by the contradiction.
There is that, sure.
Yeah.
And so many of the articles, like I'm reading on BuzzFeed and Forbes and the Chicago Tribune and CNN, and they say 5 things to know about the Childish Gambino new video, This Is America. And then they break down scene by scene. What is the white horse, the biblical reference of the apocalypse riding in the background? And you hardly notice it. I didn't notice it the first couple times I watched it. And you so start to see the trees that I think you lose the forest. Do you remember, you may not, Griff, but Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire? Okay, there was it was just like this pop cultural menagerie, and people were going, oh, yeah, I remember that, I remember that, I remember that. I don't know if Billy Joel had a message, but you almost fall into the trap here of going, oh, what does that mean, what does that mean, when you don't pay attention to what he's really trying to say.
For all the thousands of words, millions maybe at this point, that have been written and spoken about this song, I think you might be the first to come through with the Billy Joel reference.
Thank you.
I wanted to know, did you like the song?
Yes.
I'm asking Domitian.
Oh, you know what's funny?
Sorry.
Excuse me. I'm glad you asked that, though, because I remember when I saw it on Tidal, I listened to the song, and I actually did not care too much for the song until I saw the video.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
that made me like the song more, because the song sounds like, it starts off sounding like a Chance the Rapper song. So I wasn't crazy about the song until I saw the video. But then there's this other piece, too. These conversations that happen specifically in the black community, where you have these dances that become viral, you have this hold that black culture has on entertainment, and then you somewhat feel guilty about it, about having fun when so many things are happening, whether it be police brutality, systemic oppression, racism, all of these things. So it's like, are we allowed to have fun? Are we allowed to dance and enjoy while all of these things are happening in the background? That was another layer I kind of got from
the
video.
And the internet makes it such that they're happening simultaneously. You scroll through your Twitter and, you know, these videos pop up right next to each other. It's like, how is that supposed to make
But is
feel?
He saying, guys, to the black community, hey, you know, the dance is distracting us, we need to pay attention to the violence? Or is he saying, this is how we cope, this is how we live? I don't know the answer to that.
That's what I'm trying to, and I think that gets to get Griff's point about contradictory messages, because the dance is genuinely infectious. He's a great dancer.
Oh my God. So much so. I mean, really, this has to be part of his message, that you don't even see it. He is so damned entertaining. He is so charismatic on camera that you don't forget, but you almost accept. You sort of put to the side the violence all around him, the mayhem all around him. And don't forget that, as one scene after the church choir gets killed, the camera pans overhead to a bunch of young black kids that are on what looks like a balcony. They're mm-hmm. up looking down, and they're all either looking at their phones or they're videoing it on their phones. But you see that scene play out all the time, too.
Yeah, and then one of them jumps to their death.
I've heard about that, and I still haven't seen that scene. I mean, I haven't looked for it specifically.
I happened to randomly catch it on the second time I watched it, because I purposely only read a few think pieces. I was trying to keep my thoughts on it as pure as I could, and then I was like, wait, did someone just fall?
We're talking about Childish Gambino's video and song, This Is America. Griff, if you would just play maybe track 4, track 5 for us, cut 4, cut 5. But I think it's very interesting when Griff asks you, Domitian, do you like the song? Here's just a little more of the music to it.
I'm so pretty. Yeah. I'm gonna get it. Watch me move. This is Sally. That's a tool. Yeah. On my Kodak. Black. Ooh, know that. Yeah.
It's the way the song goes, right? I mean, there's different scenes and sounds, but this is a very typical part of the song. So, yeah, as a song, how is that? Maybe that's not an appropriate way to judge this.
No, that's perfect, John, because he's actually, I think he's kind of mimicking, what's the word, parodying what hip-hop sounds like right now. So that's kind of the way. Woo! All of these different, and there are no lyrics that actually mean anything in it, but it's something so wavy about it that you kind of like it. But he's actually said, this is what leads music right now. Is it okay for me to be mumbling nothings and you still like it? Or is that kind of in the realm of jazz and scatting,
but
you know, or is it creativity?
But I also, I've seen, and Donald Glover does love Migos, and he loves music like this.
Yeah.
And it's not typical of the kind of music we've heard from him before, like, especially as a rapper. He in the past has been really wordy and very punchline driven, and like a hashtag rapper, like set up some punchlines, and he's a comedy writer too, so that makes sense. And he sort of leaves that by the wayside for this one, and more of that you get from the video.
Here's some of your text messages or Facebook posts. It's on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Deb said, it's startling, it's art, it's provocative, it's beautiful, it's ugly. I could not stop watching it. This is from Lisa.
Again, people always return to that, I cannot stop watching it. Just question yourself. I felt the same way. I watched it a bunch of times because it's... But always question that. I think that's important.
Why?
Because it is... depictions of violence against black people.
Yeah.
That's worth noting.
And do you think, Griff, that's what makes this thing so mesmerizing?
I think that's part of what makes it tick. And that's what he's after.
Actually, there's an activist on Twitter, a friend of mine, Charles Preston, and he tweeted one of the only criticisms I saw of the video where he was tired of seeing black pain played out in this way. So he said, what are we to gain by constantly seeing black death in real form and art form?
And I think that's huge. Chaos and Collins wrote a great thing about it too in Vanity Fair. He's one of my favorite writers. And he was not thrilled with it and found it magnetic in all the ways that we've talked about, but also more troubling. And we've been talking about there being multiple messages here, and I think what I got from his piece is that he was perturbed that if you're going to use violence this way, your messaging needs to be more precise, and he was troubled by the fact that it wasn't, which is interesting.
Besides, except that it exists, what is he saying about it? I mean, maybe everything that we've said so far, but... Listen to this just for a second. This is Casimir, who also wrote on my Facebook page, in a world oversaturated with real images of real black death, is the bar higher for these images in fiction? You know, he's maybe a little troubled by that point, Domati, that this is really happening. Is it okay if I'm saying it's just a music video and I'm making a point? Or like Griffin saying, what we're really entertained by here or captured by is this Black Death video again, which we see all too often.
Right.
Lisa said this on my Facebook page. As soon as I walked in the door tonight, my 17-year-old son showed it to me and watched my response. I can be critical of his music choices, but I found it provocative, the whiplash of joyful living and violent death, the African musical influence juxtaposed with this American response. And then she said, Gambino's dancing and physicality are brilliant and poetic. It totally validated my son. But at least moms and kids are talking a little bit about it. And that's the Childish Gambino. This is America video. It's a song, too. And you haven't seen it yet. You can watch it on my Facebook page or Google it. On Facebook, I'm WGN King John. It's 10:54. By the way, thanks for your comments and texts on the Childish Gambino song. K. Austin Collins, and, you know, I've just got this stack of commentators about this in front of me, Griffin. Greg Kot wrote about it, too. He said it's the week the Childish Gambino blew up social media with the video dubbed This Is America, a meta-commentary on the way pop culture and real-life violence collide and go boom virally. You can read Greg Kot in the Chicago Tribune. This week, I also read a book called Chasing New Horizons. It's by two guys. One's named Alan Stern, and the other is David Grinspoon. Grinspoon is he's an astrobiologist and writer, and Alan Stern is a space scientist, and he was the guy that was in charge of the New Horizons project that launched a satellite from Earth and did a flyby Pluto. You may remember in July a couple years ago, we got some amazing pictures of what the surface of Pluto is like, and it's because we sent a satellite up there and it got there. The story of how that whole project came to be and how that satellite got there and what we learned along the way is really well told. The author, Grinspoon, is a friend of our friend Scott Stantis. Stantis is the editorial cartoonist at the Tribune, and he was saying, you got to interview Grinspoon. Grinspoon came into town with Stern. They were at the Adler Planetarium last night. Were you there for their talk? Lucky you if you were. And the White Sox were on yesterday, so I didn't get a chance to talk to them on the radio, but I interviewed them. And we'll play part of that conversation on my Monday afternoon show at 1 or 1:30. Not exactly sure where we're going to slot it yet, but you'll hear them at 1 o'clock on Monday. And then we'll post the entire half-hour podcast. But they do remind you of this, and it's something that is compelling to me just to think about. We say, we went to Pluto, like it's no big deal. And then they say, remember this. If you took the solar system and you shrunk it down so that Earth was the size of a basketball, Pluto would be the size of a pea. 220 miles away. We're a basketball, and there's a pea in Springfield. And psst, you fire off a little molecule-sized satellite that's going to make a right turn around Jupiter and whoom, get whiplashed to Springfield.
This is your catnip. You can't get enough of stuff like that.
It's going to do that for 9.5 years. And then, traveling at 10 times the speed of the Apollo spacecraft, is going to zoom by Pluto. And you're going to send signals right at that instant. And by the way, the signals take 9 hours to get there and back at the speed of light. It's so far away. And you're going to say, take a picture, take a picture, take a picture. And it does. And you get the pictures back. And they're glorious. How do you do that? Wow. Go Species. That conversation with them, posted in full Monday at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page. A little after 1 o'clock, they tell the story. Literally, when I read the book in two different places, I wept. It's 10:57. Thank you, Domi T. Pongo. It's, 11:11 on WGN. This is John Williams. As I said at the start of the show, there was a guy named Peter Lisagor who wrote for the Chicago Daily News in the 1960s and 70s. He was one of America's most respected journalists. You saw him on Meet the Press and Face the Nation. You read him here in Chicago. In fact, in 1977, America's largest chapter of the Society for Professional Journalists, the Chicago Headline Club, established a Peter Lisagor Award to recognize superior contributions to journalism. And they've been having an annual pat on the back for journalists in Chicago ever since. Last night they had it in the city, and last night the Mincing Rascals podcast won for Best Podcast. It's a weekly conversation we record at the studios at WGN Radio here in Chicago. We do it on Thursdays. We post it Thursday afternoon, as we usually do, and it includes the voices of Eric Zorn, the Chicago Tribune columnist, Scott Stantis, the Tribune editorial cartoonist, our own Steve Bertrand, and me. It also includes Kristen McQuarrie. Kristen is one of the columnists now and editorial writers at the Tribune. And you'll hear Kristen's voice here first. It is a conversation that we started talking about the fact that the Chicago Tribune no longer allows comments when you read them online. You know how you can type in a comment down below? Those things get so nasty. The Tribune, for the columnists and under the news stories themselves, no longer will permit you to comment. I asked them what they thought about that.
I'm not really a columnist. I'm just an editorial board member. It didn't come in with any like promotion or money or, you know, I just have a column on a certain day.
Skip my topic. So, this is more interesting.
Talk to the union about that.
Right, exactly.
Talk her down from standing on her desk in the union sign.
I don't mind the lack of comment section. Our emails are attached to every story. Everyone has email. You can have your little temper tantrum directly to us if you don't like something we write. I have found the comment sections to just be arguments back and forth between anonymous people who don't have to say who they are. And in the same way that I kind of object to Twitter handles that are anonymous, we have to put our name on everything we do. So if you have something to say, put your name on it and send us an email.
I don't think it's just arguments back and forth between people on the comment threads. If that were all it was, it'd be fine. What it often turns into these ad hominem attacks on the writers. They've become a cesspool, I think. I don't read them. I stopped reading them about 2 years ago. I couldn't take it anymore. It's just like it wasn't that I can't take criticism. I mean, I do get email. It's like it's a waste of my time. It really is. The comment thread, they're not interesting. The people who are writing in there are not creating strong arguments and defending them. They're going after the writers. They're just, you know, slinging crap. And it's a waste of time. And I don't know. I think the solution is this accountability that Kristen talks about. And maybe moderation, some heavy moderation.
Well, that's the point. And I think that's the point. And the part that we're missing in all of this, I think it's a good thing. It was a good thing when it was moderated well. But that moderation takes a long time. To moderate the site, moderate the comments takes a lot of work and a lot of time.
That means literally somebody reads it and throws out the stuff they think.
Exactly. And you can direct it. It can be a vital, interesting place. But if you have someone who's willing to dedicate, you know.
I have some experience in this because I used to run my own blog on the Tribune site, but I had control over my own comment section. And I was pretty relentless. I would get rid of people who were not bringing their A game. I mean, if you want to argue with me, fine. I love differences of opinion. I love jousting and ideas. But if you're just going to throw shade at people, or you're just going to, you know, ad hominem attacks, no, you're gone. And I was able to have a really good – I had a community that was so strong that we used to, like, get together once in a while. And when I lost that ability when we changed platforms, and it just it all went to hell. So
yeah.
So,
I mean, I think, what you know, the birth of the Internet early on, it was seen as this beautiful thing because now everyone would have an ability to express their opinion. And we just weren't up to it. I mean, you know,
this we failed.
You know, what
are leaving the 13-year-old alone at home saying, "Okay, you're here alone for the weekend. I trust you.
I trust you. And you come back, and it's all the hell."
You know, they talk about the gatekeepers and the fact that the people who are in the media who have their voice heard and others don't. You know, and I just feel like they've proven, the commenters, that not everyone's opinion is valid.
But that point is not so easily dismissed. That's the problem. That's the problem that the people will have with this policy and with what you guys have all said. You got huge platforms. You get to spout off. You get to say nasty things about the president if you want, but now you can't take it.
You can still comment on our Facebook. The Tribune has a Facebook page. We all have Facebook pages. Edit Board has a Facebook page. You can comment there. I remember way back when, before I came to the Tribune, when comment sections first started, and someone commented on my weight. That was so painful to me, like that my weight didn't actually match the picture in the paper, and I happened to be pregnant at the time. Like they saw me on TV or something.
So
I still remember that. I was fatter.
Shut up, Scott. Go ahead, Kristen.
No, that's all. It gets personal and unproductive.
Here's the thing. It flies in the face of what newspapers claim they want to do today, though, is build community.
We have letters to the editor sections. We have op-ed. The opinion pages are open for anybody to submit.
It didn't work. I just don't think it's worked. And maybe, Eric, if you know, with someone who's looked closely and cultivating it works. But you know, look at some of the online columnists. Often it's the same five or six people who are commenting.
Oh, yeah.
You can predict what they're going to say, and it's just not valid. Not everyone gets to have the voice or earns the voice or gets the audience. But do you read the text during your show, John? I don't read the text during my show.
I have my producer read them.
Yeah, and why is that?
You know why?
Because she screens out the crap.
She has a thicker skin than
because it's so
elephant here.
No, it's so distracting while you're trying to do a show and you've got people texting you saying
you
just
suck, you're stupid, you're an idiot.
Like texting into your yeah. monitor.
So yeah, right, so live, we're doing the show and we're reading them while we're doing the show. It's ridiculous.
I wish she was here, but Patty Vasquez does read her texts during the show. And some of them do get incredibly ugly.
That's an editorial decision she makes because some of us believe, and maybe some of our listeners believe, that reading that crap is entertaining. See what we have to go through. TV talk shows at night now sometimes read their nasty texts.
But Kimmel has the celebrities read the nasty texts about them.
Yeah, but maybe there's value in that.
But they're still not reading all of them. And yeah, and it's not like you can't take the text or I can't take the text, but it just... It's just distracting.
I mean, Kristen, don't you think this? I mean, like, here we're all professionals who have been doing this for a very long time, putting our opinions out there. We ought to be able to take it, even if it's off topic or mean spirited. But it hurts, or it's distracting, or it makes you doubt what you're doing.
And it's not valid. And that's what I keep going back to. There's one thing for someone to write on Eric's blog and have a reasoned, thoughtful opposition, even strongly worded. There's other things just to say you're an ass.
And over, like Eric and I have talked about this, did you write a piece on it or you tweeted about it, that it's like one or two or three and then you're blocked? Because I don't need to wake up every day and see being called the C word or whatnot, or bringing up...
conservative.
Right, that's the C word. So I have blocked people on Twitter, and I have no shame about that. I can take criticism. I take it all the time. You should see my inbox. And I always respond politely. Thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate your feedback.
And by the way, that works a lot.
You called them, because when they text you,
you have their phone number.
So I've called people.
Great.
Of course, they're always polite when you...
Isn't your point, Steve? Sometimes an email is especially good for this, because you'll get these missives longer than a tweet, and it's why you're stupid and you're an idiot, and I'll never listen to this radio station again. And you write them back and go, "Hey, Bob, looks like you and I had a bad day yesterday. What's the deal? Da da da." And you have a minor exchange with them, and it so quickly diffuses the anger they seem to have.
Why do you think that is? They don't have the power of their conviction.
Well, because, they actually because they just made friends with this person. Okay. Steve, why are you calling him a coward?
I think they don't. They don't really see a person behind the microphone, that's especially John, because he's so robotic.
Right. They're spewing off.
He has no feelings.
They're spewing off. They're quasi anonymous. No one's going to come back to me. And when you come back to them, when I used to get letters back in the day, I would use directory assistance, find and call people. Hey, I got your letter.
Well, that's a little passive aggressive on your part.
That's aggressive.
Or aggressive.
It's
active aggressive is what that is.
If the guy's angry,
that's active passive.
If the guy's angry with me and he wants an exchange, let's get on the phone and have it.
I'm intrigued by what I just came up with. That's active passive. That's going out of your way to be considerate to them and thereby diffuse the situation.
How about going to their house?
I did that one time.
No, you did not.
That's the immense. Although Bertrand was probably that close, he would literally find these people and call them. It's 11:20 on WGN, and that's the Mincing Rascals. Now, the award-winning Mincing Rascals broadcast of our weekly podcast. We went about 25 or 30 minutes this week. We talked about things in Trump land and things in Illinois and things in the media. We always close with some recommendations, things that we're watching or listening to, eating or drinking. I recommended this week Killing Eve, which is a really good show on BBC America on Sunday nights. I think they're on episode 6 right now. We're up to the first 5. Wow, is that a good show? Sociopath killer and so on and so forth. It's 11:20 on WGN, The Mincing Rascals. Thank you, Steve Bertrand. Thank you, Eric Zorin, Scott Stantis, and Kristen McQuarrie, produced by Elif Garris. It's 11:21 on WGN. Hey, we're going to the racetrack. Dane Neal has a couple things to tell you about this weekend and this summer. Let's catch up with our own Mr. Neal in a minute. It's 11:24. Dane Neal's on line 7, it says here. Hey, Dane, this is John. How are you?
Hey, John. How are you doing? Sounding good.
Thank you, sir. Where are you right now, Dane?
Well, actually, I'm on my way back from Route 66 Raceway. It's rained out today. I'm actually heading into WGN to be on White Sox rainout watch. So we'll see how it goes. But just down there, as everyone's geared up and excited. It's the 20th anniversary for Route 66. Can you believe it's been that long?
That's the name, Route 66 of the Speedway out there?
Well, Route 66 Raceway is the drag strip. It's the legendary drag strip, the unparalleled, recognized, best facility in all of NHRA drag racing. But it's part of that motorsports complex where they've got the dirt track and then Chicagoland Speedway.
I've been to a race at Chicagoland Speedway. You know how they always say you really can't appreciate it until you're there? You really can't appreciate it until you're there.
It's like we always used to say about the Blackhawks, you got to go to a game, you got to see it live, it doesn't translate to TV. We'll ratchet that up by like 100 times for racing in general, and maybe 1,000 times for NHRA. So drag racing takes that, and it makes it absolutely crazy, because you have the sights, you have the sounds, the smells, the vibrations. You actually vibrate as the cars are going 330 miles an hour down the track.
And they get to 300 miles an hour how quickly?
Within just a couple seconds, like 2-3 seconds, something like that. I mean, it all happens really fast. But think about this. You know, with any sporting event, you got to wait around for like 3 hours to watch the Bears lose, or any of that stuff. In racing, it is immediate gratification, 3 seconds. Somebody wins every single time, and it's absolutely awesome. You got to be prepared to see it.
I've watched that, and you're right. I don't think TV really captures what you're describing as the drama of it, because you don't get a sense of what 300 miles an hour looks like. Is it really 300 miles an hour? Because NASCAR does 170, Indy does 200. Do these cars really do 270, 280, 300 miles an hour?
Well, not really. It's really 330 miles an hour, a little over 10,000 horsepower.
Wow.
And it all happens so fast, and it happens right in front of you. The thing that makes this special, you should always get out there for all those different events. There's a ton of things happening out at the track. But for the 20th anniversary, they're going to have some of the legends out there. You're going to have people like Larry Reyes. You're going to have Gary Dyer. You're going to have Big Daddy Don Garlicks. Remember, we all grew up with those commercials.
Sure.
Even if we weren't fans at all, we were bombarded with the radio.
Big Daddy Don Garlic.
On fire, fire, fire. Yep, they'll be there along with all the stars of any, Tony Schumacher, Doug Kalita, Leah Pritchett, who'll be out at Eataly with me next Tuesday, John Forrest, Ron Capps. And you know what? With this, every ticket is a pit pass. So when people get in there and reserve packages starting at just $33, you get to go and you walk through the pits. Everybody gets to do that. You'll get to absolutely meet every one of your favorite stars.
Daniel's on a phone line. All right, guys, before I let you go, though, I mean, you're on your way back because they're rained out today. What's going to happen?
Well, they were going to have – now, this is just bracket racing. So there's some of these big events that happen, you know, NHRA events and a bunch of things that happen. But for regular, you know, average drivers, there's a lot of drag racing that happens all over the place. You know, they've got local drivers racing on that track on a regular basis, and it's rained out today. You know, safety first, you got to be as safe as possible. So they're closing it down. I'll be back at the studio a little bit later. But for tickets, get out there May 31st. Through June 1st is when it's happening at Route 66, and it's Route66Raceway.com for all those tickets, and just $33 for the packages.
Give me that website one more time.
Route66Raceway.com.
Route66Raceway.com for more tickets.
Hey, John, we got to get you up. Occasionally they'll have media opportunities. I did it last year. I got into one of the kind of modified, you know, not quite so powerful Top Fuel dragsters, and it's an experience you'll talk about forever. You should do it.
I want to watch that happen. I don't think anybody wants me behind the wheel of one of those things. And I don't want to be the guy sitting next to the guy doing it either. Those things terrify me. I mean, really, have you done that?
Yeah. And been in and around racing forever. And I've driven the stock cars, and I've ridden in the Indy cars, you know, on a side-by-side, and I've actually driven the stock cars. And there's really no substitute for... It's really a very unique experience. One thing is kind of claustrophobic, right? Because you're right in there. You've got all of that safety equipment, fire suit, helmet, and that kind of stuff. It's kind of tight. But once you're in there, you're cool.
All right, Dane, get on back to the radio station. And if they have rain delay theater, it'll always be good if it's you. I'm going to root for the baseball game, but be always happy to hear you either way. And let's talk next Saturday, too, okay?
All right. Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.
That's Dane. I'm sorry that that's not working out for him and for you if you were on your way to Joliet, but plenty of racing to come. And Route66Speedway.com, I guess, is the website. For more, it's 11:29. We've got news right around the corner on WGN. And if I hadn't come now to the coast to disappear. Thank you, Dominator. I may have died in the landslide of rocks and hopes and fear. So I swim until you can't see. WGN 1138 on WG, and this is our Vibe Score segment. Vibe Score, it's an app that I've kind of let go, but we still like the idea of rating things on a scale of 1 to 100 that are, at least in this case, on producer Griffin's mind. He always starts with a song for us, so Griff, yeah. What were we listening to there?
This is a sad one to start with, but I thought it was important. That was the band Frightened Rabbit, a Scottish band that's been around for over 10 years, and the lead singer, Scott Hutchison, was found yesterday at the age of 36, and details are still unclear, but it's terribly sad. They put out an album called The Midnight Organ Fight in 2008 that was a big deal to a lot of people, I think. Just celebrated a 10-year anniversary last month, and it's terribly sad, and yeah. I thought they were a really good band.
What's
that song
band
was called Frightened Rabbit.
Frightened Rabbit. I recognize the sound of that. I guess I've heard Frightened Rabbit before.
It's possible that you have. They were fairly successful and still around.
Well, I liked what I heard there.
That was the song Swim Until You Can't See Land. And I'm sorry to start on a down note, but it just happened. It's kind of a shock. Now, you could rate it if you want.
I know. So
seems a little disrespectful. We've done this
give
before.
That a 17? No, actually, no. Before we even did it, though, I thought, that works for me. You play some of these, I describe them as indie sounds sometimes, and I don't know if that literally is that, but I'm all about that one. That sounded pretty good. Domati, yep. Say something nice about the music we just heard.
I really like... I like the name of the band.
Oh, there you go.
That is Frightened Rabbit. Very creative.
Not usually in his wheelhouse.
Hey, can we do a Vibe Score Griff on the Childish Gambino song that we talked about for a while earlier
sure, yeah.
in the show?
Yeah.
So where are you, Griff, on that 1 to 100?
Well, song and video, as Domati mentioned, there are kind of different experiences, but
well, let's
I don't
do
know.
The video. On the video.
I have many feelings. It's, to reduce it to a number, it's very tricky.
Yes, it is.
It's a very political answer. I give it 85.
Well, what are you running for office? I'd say 91.
Yeah, I'm probably like 85.
I'm not ashamed to say I was entertained, but I was more than that. But if you just said, hey, what did you think? I got to give that a positive score for sure.
Absolutely.
Joe, you want to play along on that one?
I mean, I need to watch it because when you guys started talking about this, I'm like, are we doing the vibe score early on right now? Everyone had all these opinions, so I got to watch it before I see
anything.
Oh,
you haven't seen it?
No, I have not.
Wow.
87 million views, none of them Joe Brand.
Yeah, a little behind in the times.
What are you, a sports guy? Let's do the Crosstown Classic, 1 to 100. Joe, go.
I will say a positive 80. I think it's going in the right direction, but it still needs some improvement.
It's been up and down, that's for sure. It helps when the teams are equally competitive or equally non-competitive.
Right. Like I said, I think it's getting back to where it used to be. It still needs maybe a year or two to get there. Obviously, when the teams are each competitive or at least equally competitive, it'll be in a better situation. But I think there's a lot more excitement going into it nowadays than there was before.
Yeah, I'm about right where you are. I'm giving it an 80. It's not perfect, but I think it's better than it has been at times. And I like the direction it's going. The White Sox are not a competitive team right now, but I've watched bad teams get better, and that's not a terrible thing to do. So I'm rooting for the White Sox, and I like the series right now. How about you, Griff?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I think I was a bigger Cubs fan than I am today. I cared more.
Yeah,
these series were a big deal because they would make me nervous because I felt like all my friends were Sox fans. They probably felt like all their friends were Cubs fans.
Yeah, that's true.
But I always felt very antagonistic, and I don't like conflict. So now I don't care. Now
zero
60.
Domati, there's these baseball teams,
uh-huh.
and they play baseball in Chicago,
uh-huh.
and they play each other. It's called the Crosstown Classic.
What Alexa, stop. She was telling me what it was a moment ago. I gave it a 60.
What else is on your mind, Griff?
The show, oh, this is interesting. It happened yesterday. All in the course of a couple hours, the show Brooklyn Nine-Nine, among a bunch of other shows, got canceled by Fox. Last Man on Earth also got the axe. It's a show that a lot of people like. But Brooklyn Nine-Nine, after five seasons, was canceled. And there was an uproar of the fandom on Twitter and in the world, I suppose. I think I heard people screaming about it from their windows. And the show was then picked up by NBC for a sixth season. Now, this is the show that stars Andy Samberg, Terry Crews, Andre Brower. It's a big ensemble cast. Chelsea Peretti. Very funny comedy. Have you seen the show?
I have. And I've really liked it. But, you know, this is one of those examples where people go, I love this show. Do you watch it? No, not really.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Yeah. I have nothing but good feelings for it.
Me
but
too.
I'm very far behind. I've watched like a season.
Okay, but for what I've seen, what's my vibe for Brooklyn Nine-Nine? 89. I give it 89.
Yeah.
Where are you on that?
Yeah, I'm same place. Do you guys watch it?
Joe, you ever seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I've seen. I remember when it first came out, I started watching a few of the episodes, and I did like it, but I never really kept up with it. But I've had numerous people tell me this is something you would like.
You gotta watch
Every
it.
Summer, I watch something on the bus because, you know, we're traveling so much with the baseball team. So
oh, yeah.
I think this year that's what I'm going to watch.
That sounds like a good choice.
How about you, Dome? You ever seen that show?
Yeah, I like it. And I love to see the people from SNL win and do other things. So for that alone, I give it a 90.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's co-created by Mike Schur, who was a writer on The Office, then created Parks and Recreation and The Good Place. So he's just on a winning streak, and it's nice to see that it seems like a force for good in the culture. What's the show that got canceled before its time to you that you still think about?
Got canceled before its time?
Well, there were other shows that got canceled, too.
Like Paper Chase or something like that? You mean back in the day?
Last Man on Earth got canceled, and Great News is a show on NBC that a lot of people like that got canceled. Remember The Grindr?
I love that show. If The Grindr came back,
you know,
I had the right slot, it would win.
What I was feeling was like
Rob Lowe.
Everyone's so upset, and I get it. But Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it did get five seasons. That's a long time.
Yeah, right. That's
other
probably,
shows. You know, The Grindr got one season. I love that show.
If you want to just watch a single season of something that should not have been canceled and is as hilarious as Anything you've seen. I love that show.
I loved Enlightened. It was a show on HBO that got two seasons. That's one of my all-time favorites, and I feel like a lot of people don't know about it, so check that one out.
Are either of you guys watching the show I'm Dying Up Here on Showtime?
No.
I love it. I really, really like it. It's just about stand-up comedians in the 70s trying to make it big and all the struggles they go. I mean, they're living in closets and stuff, and it's not overpoweringly funny, but it's an easy watch. I don't know. Nobody's really talking about it. But
is it real or is it fiction?
No, it's fiction. It's fiction. I'm trying to think who's in it. I mean, there's not too many key
characters.
Is
the comedy funny in it?
It is. Yeah, yeah. The stand-up that they have in it is very good. I mean, I'm a really big fan of the whole show.
It got a first season, and I think it's coming back for a second one. It's executive produced by Jim Carrey, among other people.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Not that he's a creator or writer, I don't think, but he's kind of behind it.
Yeah.
I recommend it.
That's good to know.
I'll tell you what, that Killing Eve, we just discovered that on BBC
rate that,
America.
That's a big one right now.
Killing Eve is with Sandra Oh and then some other actresses that you don't know that well.
Yeah.
But doggone it, it's about this woman who is maybe agent for some Russian spy agency, and she's their executor. She goes out and offs people by contract. And then Sandra Oh is working with M1, the British intelligence agency, and she's trying to figure out what's going on while that agent is actually stalking and maybe trying to kill her. Her character is Eve. It's Killing Eve, and it is a sociopathic killer, and it is so good. The violence is pretty graphic, almost cartoonish. You laugh at some of these scenes.
It's funny,
lines.
Too.
It is.
I've only seen the pilot.
But it's not a real funny show.
Yeah.
Killing Eve, BBC America. I'm giving it a 94. Wow.
I'm dying to watch the rest. I've only seen the first one, but I'm in the same place
Very
on that
show.
One. Created,
I haven't seen it, but it's got a 100 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Does it really?
Who am I
to
disagree with Rotten Tomatoes?
That's what I like about you. Domati, you don't really have an opinion, but you look one up and you go with it. I like that. Okay, I just want to throw one more into the mix, and that is because I know we're all going to be a little sleepy this time next week because we will have gotten up for the royal wedding. So,
are we doing that again?
I think we should do it all the time. How jazzed are you for the royal wedding?
We did this last week.
I know. This week, how jazzed are you? we're a week closer, Griff. Come on. 1 to 100. How jazzed are you for the royal wedding?
It's not just that I'm not jazzed, but I also have nothing to say. This is just like, it just dies on its feet for me.
Okay, fine.
Is it going to be on? Are you going to get up and watch
it? It's 2 a.m. They're not doing it for America
you
time.
You better get up and watch it. For the amount that you've talked about it, I will like...
be mad at me.
Set up a nanny cam. Make sure that you are awake. I'll wake up just to watch you watch it.
Okay, hush. It's 11:47. That's our little segment we call Vibe Score. We don't even have to call it that anymore. It's 11:48. Amy Guth just strolled into the building. She's got a very interesting program ready for you. That and just a couple of other things from us coming up on WGN. It's 11:52. This is a business story, Amy, so it's to be right in your wheelhouse. Are you going to talk about the AT&T Time Warner merger?
So I'm not.
Let me see if I understand this correctly. AT&T wants to buy Time Warner. Time Warner owns CNN. The president and CNN don't get along.
You got it.
They're not best of buds.
Right.
This merger requires federal approval, and all along the White House and the Justice Department have been saying it's not personal, it's not political. The merger will or won't happen on its own legal merit, but we won't get involved just because you say bad things about us. Then, the president's new legal counsel, Rudy Giuliani, said these five words: the president denied the merger. So it wasn't Michael Cohen. It wasn't the money that AT&T paid Michael Cohen, which was like such an amazing gig for him. Here's $1 million. You don't even have to do the work.
Right.
But anyway.
How do you get that job?
Oh, my
God.
Oh,
right. You have to be super corrupt.
Oh, my God. So in order maybe to sort of shield Cohen from those allegations, he said Cohen didn't have anything to do with it. The president denied the merger. Those famous five words now. He backtracked. He walked them back on CNN this morning. He said, and here's the new quote from him, he told me directly he didn't interfere. So in about 3 days, you get these two sentences. The president denied the merger, and he told me directly he didn't interfere. So the new read on Rudy Giuliani's read on that merger is that the president was not involved. Just trying to catch you all up on that.
I'm no legal analyst here. However, I spotted some flaws in all this.
So that may change next week. It may change soon. But
I would say, next week is far too long. It'll be a totally different game
during
by
the
Monday
noon
morning.
News.
Yeah.
Right. So you got a business show coming up. What are you going to do?
I do. Well, we're going to talk about the changes potentially coming to the SNAP program, which is the official name of the food stamp program, that could put about 500,000 people in the state of Illinois at risk of losing benefits. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about solar panel makers, and we're going to talk a little bit about the proposed expansion on the Riverwalk. And then we're going to
the south end, extension all the way down to Chinatown.
Yeah,
right?
Which is really kind of cool to imagine all that
from South Loop to Chinatown, and that's not pretty river space. But imagine if they did for that what they did from the bend to the lake.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, in the Loop or on the Gold Coast.
That's a lot of land. I've kayaked all that. Like that's a long haul to get down there.
It's like $1 billion property, multi-billion.
It's one of the most ambitious ever in the city. So it's really, really going to be interesting to see how that all goes. And then we're either going to go to the White Sox pregame, or we're going to keep talking about something.
Oh, yeah, right.
We don't know.
What time is it? Because the pregame coverage is at 12:35?
12:45.
12:45.
But if it's going to start raining, we're going to...
Joe, what are you guys hearing over there? Joe, I'm sure that the game... I mean, it's not raining right now. You guessing it's going to start on time?
I would think so. I definitely think they'd want to get it started on time. Right now, I mean, I don't like to rely on iPhone, but it says 40% chance at 3 p.m.
Yeah, at 3 and not much rain until then. Well, shoot, they started in a cold drizzle yesterday.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, they pulled the tarp off and said, okay, this sucks. Let's play.
Troopers.
Yeah, if they got that big of a window, I'd imagine they get started on time.
Yeah, they'll be fine.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to be talking all about that.
Sounds like a good show, Amy Goo. Thank you for that. It's 11:56. The news right around the corner. This is WGN.